Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
The cell plants, the minister did give an update actually regarding that. He said that they're going to go ahead with the two plants,
When was
but
that update given?
I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure I've seen it in the media. And he said that they're going to go ahead with it, with the two, but not in the said form that it was currently in. They have to make adjustments. Not what the last administration, they, he had to make adjustments to them, but he did say that, right? I'm very thankful that the health team and the government doing an excellent continue to do an excellent job regarding the COVID-19, and we can see results, which is quite good. Now, people were saying they're not doing enough testing, but as the team explained on several times, you don't have unlimited resources, so you have to test when necessary. Now, if I can look back here at the first of this month, they had about 45 cases. They did about 372 tests. That was about over 11.7%. Now, if you look at like yesterday, now it dropped about 7.2%, 1,035 tests. So actually, if you look at it from a day-to-day basis, it's continuing to drop. Every day, it's continuing to drop. This is quite satisfactory. But one thing that I would like to see more of, the citizens needs to follow the authorities. That first thing they got to acknowledge, this is not normal times. These are not normal times. So you have a virus out there, a deadly virus. So you have to just follow, have confidence in the authority that is leading the whole thing. They, most of the people are coming with opinions, thinking like, okay, basically you could gather from it that they know better than the authority. They don't. They don't. So just follow what, if they follow instructions, they will get through with this
You
much better.
know, you make it seem as though people are not supposed to advance ideas. You know,
I'm not saying that.
and sometimes the authorities can get it wrong too, you know.
Yeah, why not? No,
So
I'm not saying it.
what is required in all of this is that people have that exchange of information between themselves and the authorities. You see, for instance, the governor of New York has a news conference every day. And there's one thing about it is that he gives the information, he shares the information. We've been having people at the governmental level here do a similar thing. Because a guy may be out on the street, he runs a business or something like that. And from his vantage point, he thinks, you know, the time has come for us to do X or Y or Z. And then the authorities come and share with him what is the status and why it may not be possible to do that at the particular time. So that's all you need. And we have been doing a pretty good job as a country with our information going both ways. It is true to say that there are people who have seized upon the difficulties that have arisen to say that the government appears as though it doesn't know what it is doing, that it's been just balls up and that sort of thing. But the other side of that coin is people say, but this is uncharted territory. And, you know, we've never had to deal with something like this. The reaction of the population is the one thing to say that you're going to come up with an idea. But
Like,
when you seek to implement the idea, then, and it is being applied, people
Friday, for instance.
react, you know.
Yeah, like Friday, for instance, you had a quality excellent. She speak well. Obviously, she's an intelligent person. But at the end of the day, she seems as though she like that. She obviously are not following the instructions. The lady, and you complimented her as well. She said how she visited about four businesses. They were all long lines. Then she ended up with one trolley. She also said in her conversation that she usually shop for a month. Now, that's one of the things the government said from day one, it's not business as usual. So you're not supposed to go and, because when you go and shop for a month, one thing is that you're going to stay too long in the supermarket. You can take out too many things, right? So that is what, that what came out to me. Obviously, she is thinking as usual. Then the next female you had calling, she said, well, you should have two letters per day. Right? She did not understand. The authority said A and B. A and B comes up to about 20% of the population. So you had to stagger it like this. They had to look at all the letters and stagger them. They have five groups. Right? Five groups. Where the first group got in, like A and B. But then you got the sixth group got in about eight letters. Because they're down to Z.
Yeah, but that's, but you know, there are those who will say to you, these are factors that needed to be taken into consideration in the planning process. And they weren't taken into consideration. One. However, to the degree that people might have wanted them done so. And, you know, for them, for those, the critics, it has created some chaos out there and that sort of thing.
No, but the critics don't know better than
bottom
the
line,
authorities.
But to say that is to suggest that, you know, you have to believe that everything the authorities do is well done. There are things that the government has said, look, we can't necessarily get it right, but we are trying our best to get it right. Now, the real issue here at the end of all of this, you know where we are going with this. The ultimate objective is to save lives and to keep the numbers down, to ensure that the people who get COVID, the numbers are limited. For all that has been said about how young people will still live, we don't know how they're going to live. We don't know how much damage is being done to people who are not in the most vulnerable group, but, you know, COVID, there's still a lot of uncertainty. So what you want to do is to keep those numbers down. That's how you're going to measure the success of this. Now, some people suggest that if unfortunately we created starvation in trying to keep the numbers down, well, then the government would be judged on the basis of that too. But it is highly unlikely that we are going to create starvation in Barbados because of this. You know, one of the issues that you need to look at is the concentration of supermarkets in certain parts of Barbados and the extent to which in other places you may still be able to get in and out without necessarily having all of this rush, because it is St. Michael and Christchurch, to some extent, St. Philip, but their operations in Spikestown as well, you know. So it may well have a lot more to do with the number of people who are rushing to certain locations. But we will see. Ultimately, what happened yesterday was not acceptable. What happened earlier in the week was certainly not acceptable. And you're pushing you're waiting to see whether it is indeed true that the pent-up demand caused the major problem and whether it will dissipate. Note, nobody's complaining here today. I am not seeing pictures and I'm not hearing people calling and complaining that today is a bad day. So what's happening today? What makes today different? Okay, when you compare this with a day in the week last week, is it any better or is it worse? Let me know. Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dennis. David, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm good. First thing I want to do is I want to ask your guest a question. How much cheese is produced in Barbados? And what's the difficulty in producing more cheese, more local cheese?
The difficulty is price. The cheese you buy in, let's say, Massey, that comes from New Zealand, that's made in New Zealand, like the cheddar cheese, shipped in a refrigerated container to Barbados, warehoused, packed on a shelf, sold at a profit margin on it. The price that that cheese is sold at is close to the price equivalent to the milk that you would need, which we're getting paid for at the farm gate price. In other words, it takes about 10 pounds of milk to make a pound of cheddar cheese. And right now, for the last 9 years, we've been paid $2.60 a litre. That's not changed. But even with that, because we are such a small economy and such a small dairy sector, we cannot produce enough milk at a reasonable price to make cheese, ice cream, all those things. So any market you look at in the world, liquid milk attracts the highest price. And then as you go down the ladder of processing, butter and cheese attract the lowest prices. So therefore, you will find the large factory farms in the States that milking 3,000 cows will be shipping the majority of their milk into cheese and butter factories. So basically, it's a cost issue.
But given especially in Barbados, where there is a, we have a market in the, or we have a number of affluent enough people who will be willing to purchase local things, even though they're more expensive, but if it's marketed them properly. I think that there is the biggest hurdle in that respect. I don't think it's just a matter of not being able to compete on price. I think it's a matter that instead of, because for years I continue hearing the issues that dairy farmers have with the cost of the milk that they produce and all that sort of stuff. And I'm saying that if you try to produce some sort of cheese and then market it that way, as this is a local cheese or what have you, then I'm quite sure that there are people who will be willing to pay that premium because of that fact.
Yeah, but it's a niche
market. I don't know. As I said, I'm not expert in it, and I was just asking your opinion, and I want to get, because obviously you've been doing it, you've probably looked at it all the time.
Yeah, it's a niche market. I don't think, like in my case, I'm producing between 900 and 1,000 liters a day. It goes up or it comes down based on the time here and so on. So if you imagine in my situation, there's 900 of those boxes a day of milk. Now, the Pine Hill Dairy used to do yogurt, but one of the reasons we stopped again is the input cost of the milk to make the yogurt, because we were competing against products like out of Martinique that came from France. And a lot of those products have in buffers like starch fillers and so on to build the body of the yogurt at a lower cost. If you're doing, like, say, a live culture yogurt, which is a high-end product and all that, you need straight milk. You can't put any buffers in it, starch fillers and all that. And it puts us in a difficult position because right now, the last year of production, we did just under 4 million liters of milk for Barbados. Now, we could probably sell twice that again. But coming out of the recession and the damage that the consumer lack of purchase and so on put us in, we found it difficult to get back up because you can't go down the road and buy 50 cows. You got to go to the States and do it. It doesn't mean we need to throw away the industry, but we have to find our niche in the market. And at this point in time, butter and cheese, it could be done by a single farmer, but because he'd be taking his product, and rather than sell it to Pine Hill Dairy to process it and then put it through the chain and put it on the various markets and so on, if a farmer went straight from the cow to cheese, he could do it, but he now has to deal with a processing cost, a refrigeration cost, returns, those types of things. So it's a bit of a challenge. Not that it can't be done.
Right, but this is where I want to get to the point of when we're having the conversation about agriculture. Because I don't think that we have had an adequate conversation about agriculture in this country and what needs to be done in order to make it successful. And I think one of the good things that this crisis, this quote-unquote crisis has brought about, is that now we can see the flaws within the system a bit more clearly. And a lot of these things now that need to be fixed and addressed whereas before we were just we don't have to have an agricultural a good agricultural sector. We can import everything. That sort of mentality. Now we can see where the weaknesses are and what we have to do in order to fix certain things. Like the example you started about water, and one of the things
where's the water problem coming every year? In the farming community, the water problem is coming every
exactly.
year. One person wrote here that, you know, they're hearing this refrain year after year, and we know that the drought is going to be with us into the foreseeable future.
But as you said, I keep on hearing this thing about the drought, and we keep on blaming the drought. As opposed to saying the fact, one, we're extracting far more water out of the aquifer.
Well, if we didn't have a drought,
that there. Yeah, but that's the point.
If we didn't have a drought, it would not have been as stark as that. So we have to look at it.
No, I agree. Yes, there is a drought, Mr. Ellis. But what I'm saying is that what we do in Barbados all the time is when we then get enough water, then we ignore the problem that has to be fixed. In short, we don't care the fact that we have pipes that are leaking like sieves because we say, well, we get enough water, so therefore we're going to worry about spending the money on fixing the pipes. And over the years, that pipes didn't just break down yesterday. They've been breaking down over the years, and people have known for decades that this is what has to happen. This pipe has to be replaced. And therefore, you have to put in place the system over time that is going to allow for that pipe replacement, regardless of the fact of the money that's going to cost.
All right, thank you very much. We got to go. Thank you very much. This person says the reason there are no complaints about the shopping today, and I have had people feedback that they've gone to the supermarkets and there are no long lines. People say they're in and out within 20 minutes. Some people say within an hour. So one person's view is that this is because A&B shopped on Friday and the same A&B are supposed to be shopping today. So these supermarkets will be light. They did all the shopping on Friday. That's what he implies. This other person says, I'm in the A&B Surname group. I went to a particular supermarket this morning and they got there at 7:55. There were five people ahead of them. And they were able to complete their shopping within an hour. No issues with parking. But some items at that particular location were not in stock. But when they left, there was a steady stream of people arriving and no long lines. So what is it telling us? I mean, that too many people apparently went to shop on Friday. And then now, you know, you have an ease. Now, remember, we have a holiday coming up shortly. I think one is the 28th, double holidays. So how are we going to shop for that? Because under normal circumstances, you know how Bajans shop before a bank holiday. They behave as though all the food is going to sell out unless they get there. I just don't understand the mentality that goes with that, but perhaps there is a need for a study of it, you know. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Hello? Welcome?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Can you hear us?
Yes?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I guess I'm on the air. I'm not sure.
You are.
I was calling with a suggestion with regard to the queues. And I was one of those people yesterday for 4.5 hours before I could even enter the supermarket. And bearing in mind that everybody else there was supposed to be a senior, this social distancing makes it more difficult. And my suggestion would be when people arrive, most of them are coming by car. Give each car a number, let them park. Now, the supermarket that I was at had a PA system, and they walked out and they did inform us of certain things prior to the opening of the doors. So with that same PA system, if each car had a number, people could stay in their cars. The first numbers, one, to, if they're letting in 75, if they so wish, they can get out of their car and stand in line until the doors open. And then when they're let in, then somebody could come around and advise numbers 76 to 90, and they can get out of their cars and go and stand in line so that they can filter in when the others come out. And that would ease the frustration, the heat, the aggravation, and everything else of just standing idly in a long line, being irritated by that fact. So that's just a suggestion. I don't know whether or not it would work based on what you just said. Things seem to be settling a bit, but I think it's important that perhaps if we find a system that will work, that then should the need arise, we have found, we've worked through the problems, and perhaps we've found a workable system that everybody is happier with. And no, I don't think that anything should be relaxed at this stage, given the encouraging figures.
Okay, why not?
Because we don't really know what stage we're at this point in time. And I think it's important to get a system in place that should anything come around again, we're ahead of the game and we know how to handle it. We don't have to go through the teething problems that everybody has had to experience.
Yes. Thank you very much for your contribution. Down to brass tacks. Hello? I see here that the Caribbean Examinations Council's proposal to use SBAs and multiple choice exams possibly to be administered online for 2020 has not been sanctioned by the Jamaica Association of Principals of Secondary Schools. They don't agree with that idea at all. Yes, welcome.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hey, David, Richard Armstrong here.
So Richard Armstrong is another of this country's farmers. While Paul Davis deals with the dairy farming part of it, you are not into dairy farming. You're into general farming. What exactly do you produce?
Yeah, we specialize in root crops, the potatoes mostly, and we're increasing every year our cassava production as the market opens up for cassava products.
And you have an agro-processing plant as well?
Yes, we are doing sweet potato French fries, and we're doing a cassava product which Purity is sometimes using to substitute the flour into making bread. 40% of the wheat flour is substituted in a bread.
How long have you had that project going?
The agro-processing is into its fourth year now, maybe fifth year. The cassava part of it just into its second.
From what you said to me earlier in the day, that project is likely to be put on mothballs, as you call it?
Well, with the sudden disappearance of the tourist industry, we lost somewhere between 60 and 70% of our business with the fries overnight. Obviously, that is not something that you can just claim local market to substitute. And with the economy likely to take a downward spiral because of what's going on, I suspect that the other 30% now is going to come under stress because sweet potato French fries may not be something that the 30% market keeps going. So right now, with such a low volume, it just makes no sense.
And that will impact on how many jobs?
Well, most of the persons working there were on a they weren't full time, so it impacted on probably about three full time and a few part time, five part time.
Tell us about how COVID has impacted on the agricultural sector. People like you who are into the root crops.
We haven't had a big issue. I would say our biggest issue is fighting the weather conditions at the moment. We have had some issues where we have had equipment break down, and we've not been able to get it back up and running as quickly. I heard someone complaining about not being able to get a tire patch. So it's things that would normally get done in a day, or 60 same day, where sometimes it's taken us 3-4 days to fix. My biggest problem so far is I have an issue with one of my pieces of equipment for irrigation. That part can't be sourced locally, has to be sourced overseas. And I can't even seem to make contact with the people. They seem to be on lockdown as well. Not replying to emails, phone, putting me on a queue. So that piece of equipment is sitting down, and it's not a very good time of year for that to be happening.
What do you see as the short to medium term prospects for the agricultural sector here in light of all that has taken place?
Well, I think one of the benefits of this is that people are now beginning to realize how important it is to have an agricultural sector, a local agricultural sector, especially one producing fresh produce. So I can see benefits without a doubt. Obviously, with the drop off of the economy, people spending more of themselves, and at some stage, you know, we will begin to see that having an impact on the amount of stuff that we can sell. But my long term feeling is that agriculture will benefit from this.
Okay. Let's take another call with both of you on the line. That's Paul Davis and Richard Armstrong.
Hello.
This country's farmers. Yes, hello.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis, Mr.
Yes,
Davis, and Mr. Armstrong. I'm glad I have agriculture there on the line. I was wondering, with this whole shutdown, obviously our tourism industry has been affected terribly. We are so dependent on the tourism industry. What do you all think about maybe getting into the legalizing of the marijuana? I saw a gentleman had to go to court in the paper last week for a 0.5 of a gram and charged $1,000 bail for a 0.5 of a gram. Today is 4:20. I was wondering what your all's thoughts on that are.
I hear people giving the impression that Barbados went into the marijuana, whether it be for recreational use or medicinal use, as being something that, you know, just a quick change. That is definitely not the case. The growing of marijuana is a completely different type of grow than what we are accustomed to doing here. It takes different skills. It takes a lot more management and trained labor. And it's I'm not saying it's not something that Barbados can't do, but it's not something that we can just change overnight and just keep going and reap the benefits from it immediately. And it's not something that we can put all agriculture into, because it's not a crop that we can maintain on our soils year round. We still have to have some type of rotation taking place to maintain our soils.
How do you feel about
that? There are cases where medicinal marijuana is so helpful. You know, for people with MS and whatnot. I mean, there's studies out there that show it's proven. And I'm sure that there could be some fields out here that we can designate to it. And on that note also, it does relax you a little bit. Why are we having a problem with selling alcohol at this time? My mother wants a little sherry on an evening. I can't get it. There's nothing wrong with that. I understand the whole rum shop mentality. But then again, it's like Peter having to pay for Paul, because why? I mean, there's nothing wrong with a glass of red wine on a night. I don't understand why that has been banned. Explanations on that and any assistance with, you know, other forms of income other than tourism, we need it.
Any further reaction to that?
David, I have a opinion on the marijuana. I think we don't know as yet what the license regime is, what the cost of having a license to grow marijuana is. If it's out there in the public domain, I'd like to know where it is, because I would love to be able to grow cannabis on the farm. If the Canadians come in here with the large corporations and the big wallets and so on, and bamboozle the government into thinking that the only way to do it is to have these amazing security deposits in place, these high procedures that you have to pay for a license and so on, in my opinion, if you're going to make the cannabis plant illegal, sugarcane should be illegal. Because alcohol has caused so much problems in this country from a social perspective. Now, when I cycled before with large groups, sometimes you would go down to St. Andrew and you would see some guys at the gas station at 6 o'clock in the morning. They now get up to go home having drunk already. And, you know, if we, it's our culture, if we see somebody falling, you got hanged, so it's a big joke. Or you would say, man, I barely get home last night because I was so drunk. So alcohol will cause more problems than marijuana. And the other option with the cannabis plant is that you can make material out of the hemp. So to me, there are lots of opportunities with the marijuana. I'm not denying anybody to get alcohol who is a responsible drinker or so on. But as I have said, if you're going to make cannabis plant illegal, make the sugarcane plant illegal too. Because anybody could go in a rum shop and buy 18-gallon bottles of rum if they want. But as that caller was saying, it is unreasonable to take a person who has been caught with a gram of weed and send it either to Dodds or put a $1,000 fine on them. It does not make sense, particularly when we have committed to legalizing it. So I think if you have multiple small growers, and there clearly are many growers in this country who know how to grow marijuana, we obviously have our own strains being grown here, and it is an opportunity, like St. Vincent, for another stream of revenue. And I don't think it's going to be rocket science. We have obviously a learning curve to go through, and there is a difference between greenhouse growing of marijuana and field growing of it. But there's tremendous opportunity. And if the government was to say, well, let's reduce personal income tax slowly and increase the VAT tax, you will not be faced with a situation where the large corporations come into this country who know how to dodge taxes. You will be better off with smaller producers paying tax by virtue of the VAT they have to pay on their input. So I am all for it. It just needs to be structured and regulated. But again, the ultimate point to remember is if you're going to make the cannabis plant illegal, sugarcane should also be illegal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Down to brass tacks, hello. And note that we are not speaking exclusively about agriculture today. Hello. Welcome to the program. So one thing we've established so far for the day, we don't have the kind of rush at the supermarkets that we had on Friday. And it may well be an indication that what was said by the supermarket operators when they last met is actually turning out to be true. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Hello. Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Right. Morning, Paul?
Yeah.
We're all here. Morning, hey. Mr. Armstrong. Morning. Okay. Morning. I've got, I want to speak laterally on this article in page 9 of yesterday's Sunday Sun, Farmer Dumps Milk. But before I do that, I just want to make two quick comments and then I'll conclude quickly on the milk. Now, to take the person's through the world and send them back into society and start a business, in my estimation, and there's not an existing cure, vaccine, etc., is to play Russian roulette with the societies.
How so?
Two.
But to send them back into the society, what do you say? That once people have tested, they tested positive and they were isolated. But they now get other tests that show that the virus, they're now clear of the virus. They are not to come back in society?
No, I don't mean those persons. I'm talking about generally, open back up the countries.
Oh.
Let the people go back into their normal operations, stores, everything, functional again as before.
Okay.
It's playing Russian roulette. Because you have no cure about the world, no way. So it's a big risk to do that. That's all the kind of cure and handle and grip on the COVID-19. I think you're playing Russian roulette with societies if you do that. And quickly,
what are you going to do for the next 18 months?
Huh?
What are you going to do for the next
18
months?
The next 18 months is really cautious and going forward. But you're playing touch and go and watching it with some serious analysis, Paul. Nobody can advise you do next any month. The shutdown and the guard against contracting this thing is serious. That is what it is.
But Raul, we cannot have a situation where the country is not functioning for 18 months. Because at the end of the day, if we were isolated ourselves, nobody came into the country from the States or England or wherever, and no new transmissions were coming in, what are you going to do?
The situation as it stands right now is that we've got cases, and we're grappling with those cases, and we can't take no chance with nothing going forward.
You're still not giving an answer to our role.
It's a tough one. Don't fool yourself.
Are you saying that we're going to remain in this situation for the next 18 months?
You want to hear something? Somebody said this year earlier sometime that if you play around, your death toll might be double worse if you play reverting to what it was, then to have that toll on your hand is
precarious. Well, you're dodging.
I know it sounds so, but why can't answer? The world can't answer this question.
But Raul, you have to come up with an answer. You don't have a choice. What are you going to do about it now?
You're saying we've
had 75 cases. We've had none for 4 days. We have an economy. We are not in the position of the U.S. or Britain that we have massive public funds that we can divert into paying people who are not at work. This is the problem you're faced with now. What are you going to do for the next 18 months until a vaccine comes out? Let me hear your answer.
I don't know what to tell you. I know the world at the rate saying not only Raul.
One of the things they think we definitely have to do is up the amount of testing we're doing. I believe that some of the decisions or some of the things that Paul, you're asking for, the relaxation of curfews and those kind of things, I don't think with the amount of testing that we're doing, we can do that yet because we just don't know where we are.
Exactly. Completely agree. Now, if the government came out and said...
We need to do a lot more testing to make sure...
Right, so the government ought to let us know... The government ought to let us know what is their plans for... I mean, the epidemiologists need to come out and say, well, look, we need to test X percent of the population.
They're paying cautiously to Paul.
I understand that, but the epidemiologists have to come out and say, if we could test X percent of the population, and we come to the conclusion that we knew what the infection rate is or was, that would inform us as to how we go forward. So the government then needs to come out to the public and say, look, the epidemiologists have told us like 10%, 20%. We are in the process of identifying a source for these test kits. And it may cost us some money, but in the long run, it is a lot cheaper to do that than to try and run this country for 18 months until a vaccine comes out in the current state that it's in. It can't work.
But, Paul, closing on this quickly, we can't play this like the equation 1 + 1 = 2. The world can't do it. So it's a dilemma, and it's a hard and serious dilemma. Now, quickly, going close to on the mill. But before I say about the mill, I agree that gentleman, I've been making that clarion call for years about pipes. I don't want to hear nothing about no drought, desal, whatever, because you got 60% non-revenue water going through because of pipes that burst. You got to get that sorted first, and then you get any amount of water. Desal plants ain't going to help because all your pumps, 60% still go back to the ground. So rectify the pump. So I agree with him ably. Now, this farmer here with this dump in a mill, you could imagine this article says that Mr. Hood said he had to dump 30 gallons of milk per day until he found an alternative.
You got to wrap up, bro.
Yeah. But dumping a milk and so many people on the island in the same scenario could go and give him a $5 whatever and suffer with the homeless. You can't dump no milk like no in a COVID situation. How dump milk? I would want to hear Paul really on this dumping of milk.
No, you hear him after we come back. This is Down to Brass Tacks.